like a lot of pieces of legislation we get, to address a problem that has been identified, particularly within city limits. And so I think that our response is pretty much, in borrowing maybe not necessarily the phrase in the bill, but targeted at that particular problem. I mean, the bill came here with that in mind to our committee, and we are making some improvements.
Mr. Chair, in that case, I would say that we ought to let cities design what's required for them. Since they're so unique and have needs that are so unique, they ought to be able to write their own laws. We're not going to be uniform going inside and outside of cities, so we might as well let cities do what they feel is appropriate with firearms within their limits. Otherwise, I think we need to legislate for the state and the welfare of the people and the property in the state as a whole.
Okay. Now, Mr. Chair.
And I mean, it's the buzzword, I thought, was uniformity.
Well, I think, Mr. Chair, the buzzword is trying to stop people who drive by in vehicles and shoot randomly if the intent of either scaring or injuring other people or buildings. The bill as drafted by the Senate would make anybody who lives out in the outside areas, outside city limits, who happens to exercise bad judgment, shoots in the direction of a house at a target 50 feet in front of them, but a house happens to be 1 mile back in the background, guilty of a city felony if they do it off a road. Now, they're not trying to shoot at somebody. They're not trying to injure some other gang member. They're not trying to kill anybody. They're just exercising bad judgment. They're violating the law by shooting off the road, and that's they got a violation for that. But under this bill, technically speaking, that individual would have the opportunity to be charged with a C felony for being stupid and shooting at a can or shooting at a squirrel or something right off the road. Now, we have to uniformity. We want to take care of the city of Portland, but we don't want to get the rest of the state necessarily entrapped some folks out there into being potentially charged, and there probably wouldn't be many DAs that would push it, but I don't have a great deal of confidence in the discretion allowed some district attorneys to go ahead and try to make a point on this issue. So, we took the city limit language out at one point while you were discussing this at the length about how we were going to do this throughout the state, and we got nervous and we started thinking about the scenarios out there. What would happen when someone was charged for a C felony for being at worst reckless and certainly not intentional in trying to go down and scare anybody, but being in the line of fire, if you have a high-powered enough rifle, the house can be two miles away. And you're shooting down here in front of the pile of dirt, target, but over the horizon, on the horizon, is this house with somebody in it. I mean, this comes some pretty incredible applications that we don't limit it to where the need is, which apparently is, and maybe you can correct me, within the city limits of the city of Portland.
Well, I guess, Representative Baum, and that's my other point here, and now I'm kind of losing track of where it is the committee's trying to go, that if we went back and just had the Senate language, we would accomplish resolving that problem of drive-by shootings. But what this language does is really gets us back to the preemption question, and as I recall, the city of Portland kind of came in and said thanks, but no thanks. We just soon take care of it ourselves. So I know that the intention is good to take care of the need that exists in the city of Portland, but seeing as how all of these cities tend to, I suppose, develop their own kind of needs, and they do have locally elected bodies that are locally accountable to local voters, maybe we ought to withdraw and allow them to take care of these problems as specialized as they are, as they arise.
Thank you, Representative Bauman. Further discussion?
Is that all the amending?
Further amendments? Representative Johnson?
Briefly, I think the council raised a point that's worth exploring, and I'd like to suggest something. Let's see what the committee thinks about it, because this may resolve the city limits problem. Line 19, after the number and before the word at, if we add the word knowingly, so we've got a statute that is a crime if a person discharges a firearm knowingly at or in the direction of any person, et cetera, et cetera. within the range of the vehicle without having legal authority, etc. And what this tries to do is go to Representative Baum's concern about someone shooting at something in the near distance, not knowing that there's a structure or vehicle with somebody in it or whatever in the far distance, and yet technically could be a Class C felony if the target in the short distance is, quote, in the direction of the bigger target, you know, the person target or structure, whatever it is. So what this would do would be, unless you shot knowing that you're shooting in the direction of the occupied building or whatever, it's not a felony. So knowing, you know, the knowledge would be an element of the crime that would have to be proved at trial. Does that, I just want to throw that out and give her idea one area in here anyway and see if it resolves. Now, and I say that partly because I appreciate Representative Baum's comments about being consistent internally in this bill. On one hand, we're suggesting that cities shouldn't have different laws, gun laws, than anywhere else. And yet in this circumstances, with the city limits language in there, I'm recognizing now that that may contradict the other part of the bill. So it would be nice to have uniformity.
You mean to take out the city limit language?
Well, we can
put the word, I'd be more, the only way you're going to do that is you put the word intentional, not knowingly. Intentionally.
Yeah, knowingly.
Knowingly is real loose.
It's too high a burden.
Knowingly, when used with respect to the result or conduct described by statute defining the offense, means the person actively conscious objected to cause the result or to engage in the conduct so described. Okay. Or you just can't nail them for the fact that 500 yards behind where they were shooting there happens to be a house.
That'd be fine. I accept that. And the only other question then would be just, and I wrestled with this, would it be better to have it be on line 16 before the word discharges so that the intentional thing applies to the whole shebang here? Council, what do you think about adding the word intentionally before this paragraph, line 16?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, it certainly changes significantly the, I think that if the word knowingly were inserted, it's more consistent with the bill as it originally came to the committee. The word intentionally, I think from the intent of the bill, I can envision a scenario where you've got two houses and the defendant standing on the sidewalk, and he says to the cop, "I intended to shoot the alleyway between the two houses," and I think you're creating a burden of proof that's so high that you might as well charge him with assault. So I think it defeats the purpose of the bill as it came to the committee. I think knowingly fits more closely to what the intent was.
So as to where it would be placed, on line 16 or line 19.
How about if we just leave that?
Mr. Chair, Representative Johnson, I think that, I mean, I assume that you want the knowingly to modify where the gun was being shot and not the fact that it was being discharged.
Committee?
I think if you get into the intentionally thing, and you're going to put the city in a bind. I think they're looking for a strict liability crime here, aren't they?
Exactly.
And looking for those folks to go by so they don't have to have so difficult proving the mental intent of the individual. So it's a proof question that they're going to here. So I just assume leave the city limit language in and leave out the mental intent state out so that if they get them within the city limits doing this kind of thing, then they have a better case, an easier case to prove.
Mm-hmm. Further discussion?
That's fine.
Anything further on Senate Bill 638?
One other.
Amended. Representative Baum.
Representative Mason, ask your question. Would you indulge me?
I certainly will.
If we have the city limits in the bill, and I also like the other members to comment about this, before we pass this bill out, we removed city at one point and added occupied.
Now we're back to putting city back in, occupied still in the bill.
Right. If you shoot at a, I don't care if you're in a city or not, if you shoot at a vehicle that you know, you ran over and checked it and it's got nobody in it and there's no way there's anybody going to get hurt, it's up against a bank, there's nothing, no ricochet possibility or anything, if you go back and shoot your pistol at that broken down old vehicle, it's not a Class C felony, whether it's
right.
Downtown Portland or not.
But if we limit it to the city limits, though, inside city, you can take the word occupied, arguably, out of the rest of the situation and have any kind of shooting inside the city aimed at any kind of building. Is going to...
I disagree.
I would, on this one, I would... you?
Okay, well, that's fine.
But in question, answer to your question, Representative Baumeier, I see big issues here. First of all, I would like to get rid of the city limit, non-city limit business in the sense that...
One more time.
You shoot at something driving by a car. I don't think what matters whether or not you're in a city limit or not. But the bigger issue, and this is it puts me in a real bind personally, is the section one of the bill, the preemption side. And I don't want to be very frank. I could, if section one weren't in there, I could handle city limit, non-city limit. I'd be willing to, but I hate to be such a status quo establishment. Advocate here, but I just think section one is going to, and you know where I am on presumption. I was even joined in the lawsuit against Multnomah County, and I like the preemption bill. I think the intent of the gun bill last session was to preempt the cities and counties from doing this nonsense. And I just want everybody to know that. I support presumption. I think my record's clear. I mean, but at the same time, I think we're going to get in a lot of trouble with this when it gets over the Senate because it's going to not be concurred in. I don't think, with all due respect to the chair, I don't think the issue will be preemption. The issue will be committee process, and they really have a tendency over there to support their committee chairs. They're much more of a good old boys and women. Mr. Chair, it's the same thing. The Senate did the same thing to you, and you sit up on the floor and say, "Now, members on the floor here, you may like this Senate amendment, but as one of your chairs, will you support me on this vote?" You're going to kind of invoke institutional loyalty, and of course we'd give you the same loyalty they give their chair.
Uh-oh.
Be in trouble. Well, I appreciate that, yeah. Mr. Former Chair. All I can say is I just repeat the fact that the only opportunity those senators who were not on that particular committee, in fact, probably those who are on that committee and supportive of preemption, will ever have to deal with this question is for us to give them this opportunity. Otherwise,
what we do on 2577, send it the usual route, they just would
shovel a little dirt on it and say, gee, they tried to get that in front of us and we buried it again. Yeah.
Let me just, Mr. Chair, I just conferred with my counsel here. We're to move things along and along that spirit, I think we're we're going to vote no, but we'll, just because we'll forego a minority report also. Because we don't...
Appreciate that.
No, it's obvious that I don't think a minority report would pass, but if indeed if that's what your pleasure is, we'll go along with it. I mean, we're going to vote no, we'll go along with it and move things wrong. So.
Mr.
Thank
Chairman.
You, Professor Mason.
Final comment, Representative Johnson.
Final comment. I was looking up the definition of knowingly, and I see that in ORS 161.115, paren 4, it specifically states that knowledge that conduct constitutes an offense is not an element of the offense unless the statute clearly so provides. So what we've got here is something that isn't exactly what we want, which is if somebody, for example, accidentally shoots a gun, I mean, however that happens, they accidentally shoot a gun and it happens to be at some occupied building, that isn't the Class C felony that we're after. We're talking about people who know that what they're doing and they're shooting at things. So For this reason of this statute I just saw, I again think we need to consider putting the word knowingly somewhere in this thing, so the knowledge or some culpable mental state is...
We've 161.115 for in four.
Is that for discussion purposes or?
Yes, that's discussion only. At this point,
I think it ties the city's hands. We're inside the city limits here. The guy's discharged the gun at the persons or building, and occupied buildings, you know, and.
Okay.
Representative Sanzeri.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 638 to the floor as amended to the due pass.
Full committee.
To the full committee. Thank you very much. Representative Sanzeri moves Senate Bill 638 as amended to the full committee due pass recommendation. Further discussion?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to vote no. I want to explain why. I'm going to vote no in the same spirit in which Representative Baum tries to help out people who live within the city limits of the city of Portland.
Oh, no.
And I want you to know that I'm doing this for the people who frequent the Letterbuck Room, Representative Baum. And that is that I want you to know that I do believe that it should be a felony to discharge a firearm, blowgun, bow and arrow, crossbow, air rifle, or explosive device from a vehicle upon a public right-of-way in a public place as defined in ORS 161.015 at any person outside the city limits of Pendleton. Maybe we would just want to limit that to the roundup period of time of the year. But I believe that that is felonious behavior, and we should, if it's not already, we ought to make it so here right now.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm informed that the Letterbuck Tavern is within the city limits.
It's those people who leave in their vehicles from the Letterbuck Room, and that's it. That's it.
All right. Further discussion. Hearing none.
What happens if the shooter is inside the city limits and the target is outside?
Really.
Hearing none. The clerk will call the roll.
Representative Baum.
Yes.
Yes. Representative Bellman.
No.
Serious question.
Representative Johnson.
Aye.
Representative Mason.
No.
Representative Parks.
Aye.
Representative Sanzeri.
Aye.
Chair Miller.
Votes aye. Senate Bill 638, engrossed, multi-amended, passed to the full committee with due pass recommendation. Close the public or the work session. Senate Bill 638. Would the committee be inclined to take a brief recess before we have a couple of? We have two more bills. Well, we just have two more. We'll try to finish those off. I apologize to Mr. Pearson. He's been here for a long time, and we'll try to get to your testimony on 2140, and then the Attorney General is not able to make it on 3444, but there is testimony that will be provided, and I'm anxious to get to that. So we'll be in recess until 3:52. I'd like to reconvene the House Judiciary Subcommittee on Criminal Law and Corrections and open a public hearing on House Bill 3444, Council.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3444, I think, is a significant bill for the Department of Corrections and does numerous things. First of all, it gives the courts, both adult and juvenile, the authority to order persons who have been convicted or adjudicated for certain sex crimes, burglary, prostitution, conspiracy to commit any of those, or murder or aggravated murder, order them to provide a blood sample for the purpose of analysis in order to establish a genetic profile and create a criminal identification data bank. It then prescribes the procedures which must be followed by the Department of State Police for storing, transmitting, and analyzing those samples and for storing and destroying them. It also makes these provisions applicable to all persons currently serving terms of incarceration or as conditions of probation, and then creates a statutory presumption, I guess is the best word, in terms of the admissibility of this evidence in order to prove or disprove the identity of a person. And burglary's on the list.
Thank you, counsel. You all would just identify yourselves for the record and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Eric Wassman. I'm an assistant attorney general in the Criminal Justice Division. On my right is Major Roger Dingman, the head of the Oregon State Police Crime Detection Laboratories. And on my left is Russ Spencer of the Oregon Sheriff's Association. My apologies for Mr. Frohmeyer, who was planning to be here this afternoon but was called away because of a family emergency. In his absence, I will do my best to express his very strong support for House Bill 3444, which I might add is his very first priority for this legislative session. This bill would utilize a very powerful and reliable medical technology in solving sex offenses, and we are talking here about sex offenses which are, by and large, stranger-to-stranger rape cases, among the most difficult crimes that we have to solve in this state, and among the most damaging and intrusive to the victims. House Bill 3444 would require each person currently incarcerated for murder or a sex offense, and people convicted in the future of those offenses, to furnish a blood sample. The sample would be analyzed by the Oregon State Police Crime Laboratory to obtain its DNA pattern, a genetic fingerprint, and that information would be held in a data bank and would be used by police officers investigating future crimes. This concept, by the way, was one that was approved unanimously by the Senate Judiciary Committee in the last Legislative Assembly. This bill would also declare that this genetic fingerprint could later be used in court to prove the perpetrator's identity. This bill would be extremely important in proving sex crimes and investigating sex crimes. Often rapists leave no fingerprint, but they do leave behind hair, tissue, and bodily fluid samples that can be matched with a genetic fingerprint pattern. Sex offenders are most often repeat offenders. Studies have shown over and over again that these offenders, when their sexual history is tracked, commit grotesque numbers of sex offenses of a great variety, and many of them before they're ever caught. The number of arrests compared to the number of offenses actually committed is very fractional. They commit many, many more offenses than they are arrested for. DNA testing is gaining growing acceptance and use in the legal and law enforcement and scientific communities. 11 other states, including our adjoining states of California and Washington, have enacted legislation creating DNA data banks for law enforcement. Several other states have similar programs under consideration. In 38 states, courts at the trial level and some states at the appellate level have accepted DNA evidence as a reliable and powerful scientific technique. It has been admitted into evidence. It has been admitted in three trial courts in this state to prove rape and murder offenses, trial courts, and has been admissible since 1981 in the state of Oregon by statute to prove paternity. This bill would add identity in the criminal case as another rationale for admitting this evidence in court. DNA evidence can vindicate the innocent as well as convict the guilty. In a sample of 500 cases submitted to the FBI crime laboratory, 325 of those samples yielded a conclusive result. 37%, almost 40% of those results excluded the primary suspect. So it's a valuable tool both for protecting the innocent as well as convicting those persons who are guilty. These programs, data bank programs, can be highly successful. There is one that we know of, and they're just at the startup phase across the nation, but the one example we know of in Broward County, a database of only 20 offenders resolved solve 2 cases out of 27 open cases. 2 cases solved out of that number are very significant. We urge your very serious consideration of this. We consider this to be a very important bill for law enforcement. And before I conclude here, I just want to add that I had submitted to your counsel some minor, and I do mean technical, amendments. They are simply intended to clarify the intent of the bill and not to change its content in any way.
Thank you very much. Questions?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Parks.
The cost, would it be just like fingerprinting? You'd analyze them once and they'd go into an indexing system, and then when you had a unknown later on, you just match it against that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Parks, that's exactly how it worked. The you would retain the membrane that contains the DNA pattern bonded onto it in a file. But what you would really be searching in a case would be a computerized record that contains that information in computerized form. So much as the AFIS system now works in matching fingerprints by computer, that is how this data bank would work.
So that when you had an unknown, you showed up a match on your system, then you would go back and as a check against your indexing system, you'd match both membranes then?
You could match that membrane. The way I believe this would really work would be that when you obtained a computer match, you might take the initial step of actually running the test side by side again, but I think what you would really do is seek a warrant for a new blood test from that suspect and then run a new test on both the suspect and the sample from the crime scene so that you would run a new test for court purposes later on.
The state police have the ability to do that?
Yes, they do. They have
without
that technology.
Buying any equipment?
I'll defer to Major Dingman on that.
All right.
Representative Miller, for the record, I'm Roger Dingman, director of the Oregon State Police Crime Laboratories, and Chairman Miller, Representative Parks. Yes, there is a fiscal impact with this, which includes some equipment. I think the equipment runs about $30,000. The total fiscal impact on this bill is $442,018. That includes 2 positions to do the samples, plus the equipment and the associated supplies that go with the testing. The present technology, the supplies to run the DNA, is fairly expensive. Runs at roughly $65 a sample to just for the materials to do the tests.
Could the some of the intake officer at the prison, could he take the sample? I mean, or do one of your people would have to do it?
Chairman Miller, Representative Parks. The plan would be that the blood samples would be taken right at the prisons or at the jails by either the jails, by the health staff they have there, the county nurse, county doctor, whoever is drawing the samples, and in the state institutions they'd be by their medical staff, and then those bloods would be submitted to the crime laboratories for DNA analysis and profiling.
Let me ask you one last question.
Representative Park.
If I understand this, and I've studied a little bit, if they screw the sample up at the booking end, then you won't get a match. That's the only thing that can happen if it's screwed up. In other words, it's almost got a fail-safe in it.
That's correct, Chairman Miller, Representative Parks. If they switch samples at the, say, at booking, we got the wrong sample in, it would be just a wrong name in the computer. If we ever got a match, we'd simply be getting the blood from the wrong name, and then we would run it again for court purposes. Then it would be a no match, and it would show that the bloods that came in with John Doe's name on it was not actually John Doe's; it was somebody else's.
I think it's a great bill. I really do, and I don't say that very often. Do I?
I've noticed that, Representative Park. Appreciate that comment. Major Dingman, you have any other testimony?
Yes, Chairman Miller and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Major Roger Dingman of the Oregon State Police Crime Laboratory Division. Our purpose today is to testify in support of House Bill 3444. Passage of this bill would require convicted sex offenders presently in the system and all future sex offenders to supply blood samples for DNA profiling. These profiles would be placed in a data bank for future reference in unsolved rape cases and other related sexual crimes. At least 11 other states have already implemented this program, while most other states are in the planning stages. Once these data banks are operational nationwide, each state would have the ability to cross-check each other's files. Presently, the FBI is coordinating this effort on a nationwide basis. It is well established that sex offenders are repetitive in their offenses and become progressively more violent in time. Although this bill does have a significant fiscal impact, if implemented, the forensic information obtained may result in a cost savings to the citizens of this state. The cost of providing the analytical information may be offset by the decrease in investigative and prosecutorial time. The results are so definitive that a large number of offenders are expected to plead to their offenses, saving valuable court time and dollars. It is important to realize that the analytical findings of DNA profiling not only establishes the identity of the offender, but will also clear an innocent suspect. More importantly, passage of this bill to allow DNA profiling will save many of the citizens we serve from the traumatic and tragic personal attacks on them by repeat offenders. For these primary reasons, I respectfully request your support for this important bill.